Welcome back to the Native Waters on Arid Lands podcast, where we're talking with different members of our project team about their work. This is Kelsey Fitzgerald, and today I'm here with Vicky Hebb. Vicky is the organizer of an annual event that we hold through Native Waters on Arid Lands called the Tribal Summit, where we gather people from tribes all over the Great Basin and Southwest to talk about issues related to climate change, water resources, agriculture, and what tribal communities can do to adapt. Today we're going to talk with Vicky a little bit about her role in the Native Waters Project and also learn a little bit about what is planned for this year's Tribal Summit, which will be held in November in Sparks, Nevada. And if you're interested, you can find more information about that event on our website at nativewaters-airedlands.com. Hey Vicky, thanks for talking with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Vicky, can you start just by telling us a little bit about your background and area of expertise?
Sure. I graduated from Montana State University with a bachelor's in animal science with health and nutrition as my specifics, and I have worked in tribal ag policy for over 20 years, and I'm from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe of South Dakota, which is centrally located in South Dakota, where we are ranchers. We run cattle and buckland horses. As far as my education and my life, it all kind of ties together. I have a very vested interest in what I do. I have a passion for what I do. You know, primarily at the core of any subject, it's to help Native producers. And for me as a Native producer over the last 20 years, it's been to make sure that we have a seat at the table, because historically we've been on the end of the chain getting whipped around rather than, you know, at the head or the decision-making part of it. And so it's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about Native Waters on Arid Lands.
So Vicky, you're a member of the outreach team, the Native Waters Project, and you're also one of the organizers of our annual Tribal Summit. For people who haven't been to one of our Tribal Summits, can you describe what goes on at one of these events and maybe give us a preview of what's being planned for this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So I work with organizing the Tribal Summit, where it is. This year we're moving to Reno. We work with what agenda topics there's going to be, making sure there's a good flow to the summit, making sure that everything we're talking about is relevant. But a lot of times what comes into it as well is making sure that, as well as relevant, that it is applicable, something that, you know, can be applied to these tribes, that a lot of this is brand new to them. I think that our goal for our Tribal Summit is to bring together tribes that are facing water issues and collectively bring them into a room. And we really hope that every session, every agenda item, every agenda topic is interactive, because I think that we feel very strongly that we don't want our speakers to speak at them. Because again, we go back to that, where tribes often don't have access to the information, the expertise that we have. I mean, this team is incredible, and the access to expertise is something that many of these tribes have never had. We have focus groups where we have different topics, so the tribes can choose maybe a topic that's more relevant to them or that they're having trouble with. And it's been incredible, the response. There's tribes that are struggling with the after effects of mining. The damage has been done, so now they're just trying to figure out how to live with it or how to minimize its spreading. And I think that other tribes don't realize that there's other ones out there. And then on the flip side, you'll see a tribe that's working actively with a mining company, and, you know, it's how their people get a lot of money. So there's just every extreme. In one of our listening sessions, there were some major erosion issues with water, and right there the guy's like, call me, we'll get this set up. And so that, I mean, it's exciting to watch direct communication with the result that impacts the lives of tribal members. So as we move forward, it's kind of evolving even more, and so it's like we're building on each year. It became a little more interactive last year, and this year we're hoping to bring a few youth into this and hearing their perspectives. I think it'll be refreshingly honest in what these kids hear from all of us, and then how they, you know, interpret that, and we'll probably be able to learn a lot from them. And then as far as our sessions, again, we're just trying to build on the needs out there to try and bring in, you know, we're always trying to bring the tribes to the table and have them speak about, you know, what's going on there, because part of the biggest credibility of a program like this is your tribal base and, you know, the problems they're having to build on someone else's that they can finally come together. Because even though we're classified as, you know, one minority, I mean, every tribe is so different. I mean, even within the Sioux, you know, there's Lakota, Nakota, Dakota, I mean, many different Sioux tribes. And so, I mean, it's the same thing. Navajo, they have all their chapters. And so it's interesting to watch as decision makers and department heads and producers come together. And so hopefully this year we'll just keep building on that and start maybe being able to be a little more hands-on in the off-season as well, which we're trying to do right now as well. And again, that just equals impacts and hopefully a very successful summit.
You mentioned that we're planning some activities for the summit this year for youth. Can you talk a little bit about why we're hoping to get youth involved in the project and if you've had success getting youth involved with similar projects in the past?
Absolutely. So for the past 10 years, I've worked with the Intertribal Agriculture Council with our yearly membership meeting in Las Vegas. And we've created a youth track where we bring kids in and they address more like the business side of it, the ag side of it, that ag is more than cattle, horses, and hay. And so I think that directly applies to what we're trying to do. It adds another layer to what we're trying to build upon, because these kids first don't understand that there's other kids out there like them. So we're not just going to tap into one tribe. We're hoping to get, you know, a number of tribes involved with their youth where they'll be able to do interactive activities with each other. There's a bond that happens very quickly, and from my experience, the perspective is invaluable because they see more than we know. And I think that if we don't start bringing these topics, especially the Native Waters on Arid Lands type of topics, which probably aren't your, you know, everyday topic that anyone's talking about in school, or if there is any of them, they're just very general. And so I think it's important for them to see some of their leaders coming together, knowing that this is important, knowing that water is essential, you know, the effects of it, how it affects our future, how it affects the environment. And once we start with that youth level, then we're starting to build a responsible next generation.
What does effective outreach mean to you, and how do you try to achieve that in your work?
I feel very strongly that effective outreach equals impact and results. And when I say that, I don't mean them as buzzwords. I mean it as practical, applicable results within a tribe or a producer on that tribe. Within tribes, a lot of them are very remote, and so they're not included in a lot of the decision making. When you go to the U.S. government, and we are government to government in those relations, historically, it hasn't been treated as sovereign nations, and so we haven't been consulted on some of those issues. And so I feel like for us to be effective, it's to make sure that we address a combination of things in our outreach efforts to get the right people there. I think we need our decision makers there. We definitely need, you know, the tribal chairman. We need the directors of the ag resource programs. Some tribes don't have those. Sometimes don't know they should. And so by coming here, you know, you have a tribal chairman that goes, oh, I need to go back and make a difference and make some changes. And then the most important thing is education in a way that is easily understood, and also that, again, it's relevant.
So you mentioned that you're from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation up in South Dakota. Can you tell us a little bit about your reservation, what the environment's like in your region, and what importance water has to your tribe and your reservation?
Yes, so the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe is a larger reservation. It's roughly the size of Rhode Island. It's the plains, and when there are hills, it's rolling hills, and so it's really rough country. You might see a cow across the pasture, but to get there, it's going to be like an hour and a half, you know, because you're going down huge embankments and stuff. And so for us, we just have a lot of open country. Water impacts us greatly because we live along the Cheyenne River and then the Moreau River, which all feed into a dam that feeds into the Missouri. And so for all of us, some of these federal programs are very important. When my husband and I took over the ranch where we are, his uncle hadn't developed water. And so they just were able to use, you know, the land down by the river. And so we participated in some environmental quality incentive program through the NRCS and done some cross-fencing and developed that water. And then also the conservation stewardship program again through NRCS and developed some dams, because access to water is just singular. If we're in a drought and our dams don't fill up, I mean, we are just completely out of luck if we haven't developed other ways through wells, you know, to pipeline that water. We had to put in like 30,000 feet of pipeline. The land that we ranch on is about 8,000 acres, and then my in-laws have about 12,000 acres. And so for us, managing water is more like managing all of these outlets, where it goes and the pumps and the pump houses, and making sure that we're using it properly and that water quality is huge. Our water comes down from the Black Hills, which is in By Rapid City, so it's a couple hours away. But on a flood year, you know, the water quality is very much compromised. I mean, I've seen a cow floating down the river. I've seen a washing machine, a car, you know, because it's a larger river than you would think. And it's, you know, has a very stout current. So we definitely rely on more than just traditional forms of water use and maybe conventional. We don't do irrigating. So we just do what little farming, which is not a lot. We only farm a couple hundred acres, and even in our area there's very little, but what farming we do is just dry land farming. So right now, very interestingly, water is very important to my tribe because we have the Dakota Access Pipeline coming through there. We live very close to North Dakota, and so we are right next to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and they go into North Dakota, and so we have a lot of fracking up there, and then the oil fields. There's such an impact too, and not even what you would think, like just not only with the mining of that oil, but as well with all the people, and you get more people than what, you know, because we're very remote. I saw yesterday on a slide we have 3.1 million cattle, and I think we have less than 500,000 people in our whole state. You know, so when you get that kind of pressure on any kind of environment, you're just going to see huge impacts. You know, we've seen huge impacts on our wildlife, fishing quality. Sioux tribes are hunters, and so rather than like at Blackfeet, you know, Idaho, they do more like the salmon traditional fishing and stuff like that. And so we also see that effects in the deer. You can tell that, you know, all this pressure is affecting that wildlife. For us directly, we're not a casino tribe. We don't have per capitas. And so like the little community I live next to, we're in a county that has been the poorest county in the nation for the past 3 years. I don't know the status this year. It's not, you know, it's not something you're proud of, but it frustrates me because within my county and my tribe, we're not using that statistic to help us more. And so that gets a little bit frustrating. But my point of that is that this community relies heavily on hunting. So whereas you might go to Rapid City, which is the second largest city in South Dakota, those individuals are hunting kind of for a sport. And then they might eat the meat, but literally, where I live, people rely on deer meat to make it through the winter. So, I mean, all of that just impacts how we live, because it's not, it's not reclusive, but, you know, it's definitely still very Western there.
How do you think that your experience living on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation has contributed to your interest in working on the Native Waters Project?
I mean, completely, 100%, you know. So, I mean, I come from a tribe that's very vocal on water's life. I mean, it's now the slogan of almost every Indian tribe. And we were talking about this because there's been some negativity with everything that's happened with that as well. But at the end of the day, there's not anyone on this planet that can deny that water is essential to life. And so when I was approached about being a team member on this project, I was extremely excited, because in the very early years of my career, I'd been doing this about 2 years. We helped with a lot of the tribes and their irrigation issues, their water rights, access to that water, Gila River. We really helped them with their, you know, their water rights, their water ownership, Agua Caliente in California. We worked directly with lawyers. And so in the 90s, water was a huge issue. All those water rights, and especially in the Southwest, and we did a lot of that work. And then it just kind of faded a little bit. So when this opportunity came, because you know it's still there. You know those don't go away. Even when you get, you know, maybe a decision in your favor as a tribe, you know, even in under, you know, a jurisdiction. But I just felt like, yes, we have to come back to this. So I was very excited to be part of this. And my state isn't one we're focusing on, but it's interesting because it's really come into the mix because of the focus of what's happening with all the pipelines and what it affects, oil spills. So I'm excited to be part of it.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like people to know about your work or the upcoming Tribal Summit?
Well, we would like you to come check us out, see, you know, and let us know if we can help in any way, give you more information. You have a topic that you know of that we could cover. We're very open to this agenda and making it the people's agenda and, you know, utilizing all these expertise that will really help individuals and tribes. You know, a tribe as an entity affects all of their tribal members. And so I think it's most important that we just get these tribes there. I mean, the ultimate goal would be to get every tribe in the Southwest there, and we can't even reach them all. That's always the best thing that you can hope for. And so every additional tribe is a win. So we hope to see you there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. It was really interesting hearing about life up in South Dakota. And we look forward to seeing you at the summit this year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Funding for Native Waters on Arid Lands is provided by the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Institute for Food and Agriculture. If you'd like to learn more about the Native Waters on Arid Lands project, please visit our website at nativewaters-airedlands.com, where you can find more episodes of this podcast and also supplemental information to go along with each episode. Thanks for listening!